genius.
The fully realized vision of an authentic American genius.
We need your brain.
Don't you have a brain in your head?
Oh, then I will have to adjust your brain a bit.
Every day, Billy the Brain talks with the best guests in America.
Cool.
About business.
The boss that works for you.
Entertainment. Sports.
Turning now to sports.
And the local community.
Radio keeps its eye on local events.
It's time for brainstorming.
My brain is like mush.
With Billy the Brain.
Sounds like fun. Let's go.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Hi, this is Bill Frank, and you're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain. We're on every day, Monday through Friday at 10 o'clock here on KKZZ, AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. We're also streaming over the internet at brainstormingonline.com. My goal is to bring you interviews with thought leaders in business, entertainment, sports, and the local community. Together, we'll listen to what these people have to say and relate it to how we live and work right here in Ventura County. If all of this sounds like National Public Radio, well, then you're getting the idea. Brainstorming with Billy the Brain is NPR done right. If you want to join in the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008, 639-0008, or if you're outside of the county, it's area code 805-639-0008. Every show has a theme, and today's theme is productivity and politics. Now, these are two words that don't often appear together. That's true. In fact, Stephanie Vance, who reminded us a couple of days ago that democracy is supposed to be messy. Well, it's messy, all right. Our first guest said the founding fathers intended for the size of the House of Representatives to grow with the population. But contrary to the framers' clear intention, the size of the U.S. House of Representatives has stagnated at 435 members since 1911, when our population was a mere 92 million. That's less than one-third of what it is today, about 310 million people. Why hasn't government kept up with the pace of the times? If you've got a thought about this, you want to join the conversation, you can call us at 639-0008. My guest, Matthew Casalotto, is a former aide to House Speaker Jim Wright and also an aide to Congressman Leon Panetta. And Leon Panetta, as you know, is now the head of the CIA. For more than a decade, though, he's headed Ovation International Incorporated, which is an executive communications firm he's founded in Westchester, New York, following his years on Capitol Hill. Matthew, welcome to the show. How are you today?
Doing great. Thanks for having me, Billy.
Oh, it's my pleasure to have you on, especially somebody with your credentials. So
can I
let's
call you Billy, or does it have to be Billy the Brain?
You can just call me Billy for short. That'll make the conversation flow better, Matthew. It'll work. It'll work either way, though. So let's go back to civics class for just a minute here. All right, the framers of the Constitution and the Bill of Rights intended for the total population of congressional districts never to exceed 50 or 60,000 people. Currently, the average population size of each of the congressional districts, however, is nearly 700,000 people. What impact has that had on the principle of proportionality and equitable representation in Congress?
Well, it has an obvious impact. Each member of Congress has a real tough time representing that many people. It's pretty obvious that that would be a difficult thing to do. 700,000 people, that's quite a bit. The first Congress, I think, had something like 33,000 people per representative. Then it expanded, the House expanded. The whole idea, going back to civics class, and Madison, James Madison, made it pretty clear that he took for granted that we would increase the size of the House from time to time after every census to keep pace, at least somewhat, with the population growth. And keep in mind, Billy, that the electorate in the early days, the first several decades of the country, was really pretty restricted. It was landed, propertied, white males, basically.
Right.
So you really were represented if you had a landed, propertied white male in the House representing you. But our population has grown. We're much more diverse. The electorate itself has expanded enormously since those early days, in addition to the population growing remarkably. You know, since 1911, more than triple the size, the population. So what has this done? It's made it harder for people to feel connected to or get access to their representatives.
Has it led to any unintended consequences? And specifically, Matthew, what I'm referring to here is lobbyists.
Well, if we go back to sort of an economics principle, if you think about any commodity, like let's say oil, everyone knows about OPEC, and if you restrict the supply of a commodity that's in demand, what happens to that commodity? The price goes way up. The people start to work in sort of a what I call a black market. People understand what that is, sort of off the books kind of trading in that commodity. I think what's happening, and it is an unintended consequence, I believe, is that in Washington, because the representation has been capped at 435 and the population has surged, the electorate itself has expanded, there's a artificial cap on the supply of representation. So what we do is people find other ways to get represented in Washington, and that's through lobbyists, or it's through interest groups, or through campaign donations and kind of campaign contributors. They get pretty well represented.
Now, we're talking to Matthew Casalotto, everybody. Now, does that representation through lobbyists, as you're painting the picture here, Matthew, does that lead more and more citizens to feel even less engaged in the representative democracy system?
Well, unless they're a giant corporation or a large interest group with a lot of money, it is a little bit of a disenfranchising kind of a process in which people do feel that they're distant from or not connected to the representative. Remember, if you go back, there were very few people per representative in Congress, in the House, and now there are 700,000 people per representative. And the whole idea here is to go back to sort of basic principles and also recognize that there's nothing magic about 435. I mean, there is no, that's not the ceiling. That isn't the upper limit that any legislative body can accommodate.
Well, give us the history of why are we capped out at 435? I mean, why not 400? Why not 500? Why such an arbitrary number as 435?
Well, it is very arbitrary. In fact, the debate in Congress that took place about not increasing anymore and imposing the permanent cap, there were members of Congress who said, this is arbitrary. Let's not do this. This was in 1929, actually, when the cap was actually imposed by statute. And there's an argument, Billy, that this kind of a cap should only be made by constitutional amendment, shouldn't be made by statute. But why was it done? That's a big question. It's a big mystery to me. I don't think anybody's really figured out exactly why it was done. I think there was a sense. In fact, there was some in the 1920s, and this was after we talked about the 19th Amendment was the anniversary, 90th anniversary of the 19th Amendment just happened. Mm. That's when women got the right to vote.
Right.
1920.
Mm-hmm.
You would have thought if you double the electorate in 1920, give women the right to vote, long overdue. If you doubled the electorate like that, you would increase the size of the House immediately and give them a chance to give women the chance to get elected. That didn't happen. There was also a growing sense in the 1920s that the population of the country was changing. It's becoming more urban and more ethnically diverse. And now, I guess we should throw in women having the right to vote. Maybe there was a sense of let's not increase the size of the House because of that. It's hard to know exactly. I do know that the result of the cap has been this. A lot of difficult situations have arisen, this sense of people not feeling connected. Also, the size of districts and the shape of districts. If you think about all the gerrymandering that goes on, the districts get really weird if you look at the size and shape. And it's very hard for members of Congress to represent all of those people. It causes more expense when you campaign because you've got a larger district.
I agree. We're talking to Matthew Casalotto, everybody. And Matthew, just in the interest of full disclosure, let's go back to the history and talk about when women did get the right to vote in the 19th Amendment. There was some finagling that went on there, too. And what they did was, instead of doubling the size of the House, what they did was they required or doubled the requirement of representation. So it went from essentially 30,000 people, 30,000 citizens per representative, up to 60,000 people, and that's how they got around it and kept at 435 or thereabouts. Correct?
Well, the I'm not real sure about that exact history. That you might be right. I just know that in 1911, the census of 1910 calculated the number of people 92 million. And the House did increase from the prior census. So then that was the pattern. Every 10 years, the House would increase. Sometimes 50 seats, sometimes 30, sometimes 12. You know, it varied.
Mm.
But in 1920, after the 1920 census, there should have been an increase, an augmentation of the House in the 1921-22 period, and it didn't happen.
Mm.
And whether it had anything to do with the 19th Amendment... You know, I think there's an argument you could make that it might have had something to do with it. But by 1929, there was a decision to cap it at 435. And just so you get a little perspective, your listeners understand, 435 is actually very small in relationship to other legislative bodies in the world. The House of Commons in Britain has 650 or 651 members. So 435 is not the upper limit. The French National Assembly has 577. And by the way, those populations in those two countries, about 60 million, just a fraction of what our population is at 310 million. So it doesn't make a lot of sense to have it capped at 435, even if, people might say, well, gee, we don't want more politicians running around. We don't want more of these people who don't represent us anyway. My argument would be, if you had more of them, maybe they would represent you better.
Well, that's an interesting point. I want to delve into that, Matthew, a little bit more deeply when we come back. We've got a break to do some business, pay some bills, but I'll tease the audience, because a lot of my audience is for smaller government. So my question to you when we come back is, won't more representatives just mean bigger government? Don't answer that now. Answer it when we come back after this short break.
And now, back to brainstorming with Billy.
A perfectly good brain wasted.
Now, here's your host, Billy the Brain.
Welcome back, everybody. This is Bill Frank. You're listening to Brainstorming with Billy the Brain here on KKZZ AM 1400, Positive Talk Radio for Ventura County. Every show has a theme. Today's theme is productivity and politics, two words that don't necessarily go together. My very special guest for the first half hour is Matthew Cossoletto. He calls himself the Podium Pro, but the reason that I'm bringing him in is because he is a former aide to House Speaker Jim Wright and a former aide to Congressman Leon Panetta, who now serves as the head of our CIA. And what we're talking about is really constitutional law, and we're talking about the 19th Amendment. When women got the right to vote, we increased the number of representatives per representative in the Congress from 30,000 to 60,000. And before we went to break, Matthew, I was saying, the question is, more representatives in the House of Representatives is just going to mean bigger government. Is that really something that we want?
Well, one thing, if people want smaller government, they might want to think a little bit about whether it would help to have smaller districts. I mean, this is kind of the corollary. If you have more representatives, that means you have smaller districts, and members of Congress can represent a smaller territory and a smaller population much better than members do now when they have 700,000 people in large expansive districts. So I think that would make for a better representation. I think that's what the Founding Fathers had in mind. Now, if we want to argue efficiency and say that we should have a more efficient government, then we would sort of do away with checks and balances. We already have three branches. We wouldn't want a legislature. If you wanted to go into a complete efficiency argument, we would do away with this nicety of having elections and representation.
Well, I'm not sure we want to go to that extreme either, Matthew.
Obviously, you're not. But
right.
I'm saying that's not the argument about the real argument is how to represent this country. How do people feel connected with their government? How best to make sure their interests are represented, and not just the interests of, let's say, lobbyists or special interests in Washington. So the more representation you have, the more chance you have that people, the real people, the average people, citizens, voters, would actually have a voice and get represented in in Washington.
All right. So if I can paraphrase what you're saying, it would result in more representation and not necessarily in more government. So it would be better for us. But the question, it sort of begs the question. Right now we've got 435 ditwads representing us in Congress right now. Some would argue that we don't need any more of that anyway. How, what would you say to that? How would you comment on that?
Well, by suggesting that the number should not increase, you're basically saying, you know, we don't like the people we have in there, so let's keep them in there. Let's just not change it. The whole idea about increasing the size of the House is to shake up the House, shake up Washington, bring in fresh blood, bring in more voices. So that would be the solution, you know, change what's going on. If you keep doing the same thing over and over, what's that a definition of?
Well, if you keep doing the same thing over and over again and expecting different results, that's a form of insanity.
That's right. So we're doing the same thing over and over. We're electing every 10 years. We keep it at 435. We don't change that. And then we expect them to behave differently.
Mm.
Now, you know, my suggestion is let's change the ceiling, raise the ceiling, and have more representatives, smaller districts, more access, less lobbyist influence. That's the way to do it. More representation is better.
All right. Matthew, you're slowly starting to convert me. I'm going with you so far. But
at least think about it.
I'm thinking about it. But we had Stephanie Vance on a couple of days ago, and she, of course, is the advocacy guru. And she was talking about if we wanted to increase the size, there are some limitations. I mean, there's the limitation of the size of the House, of the physical building. There's a limitation in office space. We've got staff members sitting on top of each other, literally, in each of these congressional offices. And so, I mean, there are limitations upon limitations. What about the logistical problems? How would we handle that?
Well, one thing you could do is think in terms of a trade-off. Instead of more staff, you have more elected representatives. So you get rid of some of the staff and you have elected representatives. That's a little bit more direct, so that you have more, the constituent, the voter, is, again, feels more connected to the representative instead of having a bunch of more staff, you know, hanging around who are not elected.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, you know, I think that's kind of a bogus argument. Also, the size of the chamber, again, you know, if we're going to start saying, well, gee, we can't increase representation because, gee, we got the size of the chamber, we can't change that. Well, not much work really gets done inside that chamber. That's where they go to vote. Most of the work in Congress takes place in committees. And if you have more representation, more representatives, then they'd be able to focus on their work more. You'd have more people. It's like hiring more people to do the work we want them to do. And right now they're kind of overloaded. You know, each member has 5 or 6 committees, and they've got 700,000 constituents. They've got campaign contributors. So let's add more so that they can do their jobs, representing us better. And I don't think the size of the chamber really should be a factor.
All right, we're talking to Matthew Consolato, everybody. He calls himself the Podium Pro, but we're talking today about the size of the House of Representatives. Matthew, another question. It's sort of a corollary to the limitations, logistic limitations, and that is, what about the cost to the taxpayer of increasing the number of representatives? I mean, there's more salaries, et cetera, et cetera. What sort of costs would we incur if we decided to increase the number?
Well, again, the House increased every 10 years until 1920. So, you know, they people understood that there might be some additional costs, but that was the cost of doing business as a democracy, that you'd have to have maybe some additional costs. Now, I think the costs have gone up in Congress largely because staffs have grown, and so I think we do a trade-off. We don't increase the budget, we just increase the number of elected representation. Elected representatives. So I think you can do this without spending a lot more money or even any more money, because you could reduce the size of the staff.
All right. Let's take a look at it from another angle. Today, you know, Congress comes to a grinding halt with its current size in the House of Representatives. And we all think of the pictures, the scenes that we see from other countries. You mentioned France and Great Britain that have larger, lower houses. And we see scenes of people arguing at one another, literally throwing shoes across the aisle at one another. I mean, aren't we going to turn this into the Circus Maximus of the House of Representatives if we have more people in there? How can we ever expect to get anything done?
Well, you know, listen, I guess it's a good point. I don't know that a lot of the all the legislatures behave that way. We see the you know, it's a man bite dog kind of thing. You know, we see the real extremes from the South Korean parliament and some of those. So we shouldn't lump them all together. A lot of legislative bodies behave, you know, very well. Scandinavian countries. You know, there's a country like Sweden has 8, 9, maybe 10 million people, and they've got a lower parliament that's almost 400 members, almost the size of our
wow
of our house.
That's a dramatic comparison.
Hmm. And they're not really, you know, they're not really fighting and shouting and screaming. You know, they can be, they could be very orderly. The German parliament, I think, has 650 or something like that. Certainly over 600. You don't see, video clips of them fighting and screaming and yelling. So I think we could have a little decorum. And again, most of the work that gets done in our Congress, in our House of Representatives, is done in committees, or it's usually pretty orderly. You know, so I don't really see that being a huge problem. Obviously, you don't want to see that, and when you're on C-SPAN, maybe people behave better. So, you know, we'd still be on C-SPAN.
There you go. We're talking to Matthew Casalotto, everybody. He calls himself the Podium Pro. Matthew, I've got a couple more questions, but before
sure.
we get to those, if somebody wants to learn more about you or find out about you, where would you direct them?
Well, I think the podiumpro.com is the main website for me. For this issue, there is a website I've come across called 30,000.org, spelled out 30-1000.org. A lot of research has been done. There are a lot of people really getting into this, and there is a Supreme Court case that people can go to a website called apportionment.com, I think. .net, apportionment.net, and people can get some good research. There is a Supreme Court case on this. There's a real issue here about, you know, enlarging the House. Obviously, there are upper limits. We talked a little bit about that.
Yeah.
650 maybe isn't out of the question.
Well, let's do some quick math, and then I'm going to ask you for a solution. But we've got 310 million people in the United States. If we're going to have one representative for every 60,000 people, pen to paper, quick math, that's 5,167 representatives we need.
Yeah, that's not going to
happen. That's not actionable. Right.
That's not going to happen. It's probably going to be somewhere between 435 and, you know, 1,000 or something ultimately. But it'd probably be, I wouldn't mind seeing 50, an incremental increase every 10 years of 50 members. Remember that some states lose representation every 10 years because of the cap. So, you know, some states that maybe have increased in population, they lose representation because of other states that have increased more rapidly. You know, Texas or Florida or California, they, you know, get more representatives all the time.
Sure, and blame California.
Lose. What's that?
Sure, blame California. Everybody else does.
Right.
All right.
Well, you have a lot of representatives, and you have a lot of people. That's great. And I'm from California originally, so I, you know, I appreciate that. The point is that why should other states lose representation? Why don't we increase the size as wasn't originally intended? Just, you know, don't keep this cap going. The line I like to use, if the House won't lift the ceiling, the voters should raise the roof.
Oh, I like that. If the House won't raise the ceiling, voters should raise the roof. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, Matthew, it's come to that point where I've got to ask you for a suggestion. So what is your suggestion, a solution for this problem?
Well, I think beginning a process in which there's an augmentation, a reasonable augmentation, maybe 40, 50 seats in the House every 10 years, and maybe getting up to 650, 750, something like that. I don't think that would hurt us at all. There's nothing magic about 435.
And do you think we would have better government, and in what ways would we have better government?
Well, I think that right now there's a lot of frustration. People feel disconnected. I think we would have more connection, more access. We'd get away from what I think is a very pernicious trend toward more lobbyists and special interests having all of the access. And I think members of Congress generally mean well, but they just, you know, they're overloaded with interest groups and lobbyists, and they have 700,000 people to represent. It's difficult for them. So let's make it easier. Give them some help. More elected representation would help them, and it would help the voters feel connected. They probably turn out to vote more. I also would like to suggest that we have a national holiday on Election Day, just to encourage people to vote and to kind of recognize the value we place in elections. Have a national holiday on election
day. Oh, Matthew, now that's one we're going to have you come back and debate. Okay. We're out of time. We're going to have to leave it there. But we will have you back to talk about a national holiday, because now you're talking about closing the bars for a whole day, and I'm not so sure I'm excited about that idea. Yeah, one or the other. But we'll come back. We'll have you back to talk about that, Matthew. Thanks so much. It's Matthew Casalotto. He's called the Podium Pro. You can find him at thepodiumpro.com. Thanks so much, Matthew, for being our guest. We'll talk to you down the road.
Thanks, Billy. Appreciate it.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you.